Hello and welcome to The Law Report. I'm Damien Carrick. Today, meet legal trailblazer Antoinette Kennedy. She recently stepped down as the Chief Judge of the WA District Court. She was WA's first female judge, and she's also the state's longest-serving judge. Antoinette Kennedy has strong views about how state governments in WA address crime and sentencing issues.
It's becoming an increasing problem. The community has become more frightened of disorder than of tyranny, and the history of the law and the history of Australia shows us that in reality there's no reason to be more frightened of disorder than tyranny. And when you frighten people so that they are more frightened of disorder than of tyranny, they're likely to give up the rights that have been fought for since the 13th century, and they're likely to let politicians do whatever they please. And the politicians simply don't realise what they're doing. They're not malicious. They simply do not understand how far they are diverging from the British justice system. And I think the 19th century social commentator Walter Baggio is reputed to have said something to the effect that the British are famous for inventing wonderful institutions which they themselves don't understand. And we've inherited those institutions, and our politicians don't seem to understand them any better than the general community, and they're showing a complete lack of leadership.
In what way are they showing a lack of leadership?
Well, if the media or any interest group kicks up a stink, they never try to explain anything. They simply agree. And we now have, for example, in Western Australia, mandatory sentencing legislation where there is a 6-month sentence for assault occasioning bodily harm on a police officer. Now, you've got to understand that the complaint about that is not simply that it's a 6-month mandatory sentence, but that assault occasioning bodily harm means any bodily injury of such a nature as to interfere with health or comfort. And so the example that we've had in Western Australia is if a rose seller hits a policeman on the hand with a rose and a thorn goes into their hand, that is an assault occasioning bodily harm. Now, under the present legislation, you could get 6 months, or you must get 6 months jail for that. So it's not only that it's mandatory, it's that it covers very trivial things. And of course, the problem with that is that even the Commissioner of Police knows that that's a problem, because he's now announced that not everyone will be charged. Our Commissioner of Police is a very decent, intelligent man, but he's just a man, and we're supposed to have the rule of law, and the law is not supposed to depend upon you encountering a nice policeman. And so it should not be up to him to decide, I will use this law this time, I won't use it on some other occasion.
Look, I've got to put it to you. I mean, these mandatory sentencing laws, I think they were brought in as of September last year, and it's a mandatory 6 months jail sentence if you hit a policeman causing bodily harm. I mean, these laws came in, as I understand it, as a response to an increase in the number of assaults against people like police and AMBOs. And the AG has referred to instances of people not going to prison when these sorts of people sustained injuries such as broken noses or chipped teeth.
You would need the particular case, and you would need to know about the particular case. It's very rare for someone to do a serious assault to a police officer in Western Australia and not go to prison. And you just can't look at an individual case without digging down into the actual details to find out why that is the case. And even if that were the case, then they should have made it for something a bit more serious than assault occasioning bodily harm, so that we now have a situation where even the Commissioner of Police knows he's got more power than he wanted and is saying, I'll only use it in certain circumstances. So trust me, I'm a policeman, I'll only use it in certain circumstances. That's simply not acceptable, as decent as our Commissioner of Police is.
Who do you fear will be affected by these laws?
We all know who'll be affected. Aboriginals and young people. Unless the Commissioner of Police goes on doing what he's doing and not use it.
Because so far there have been no convictions.
There's been no convictions because they have not taken any action, because they know that if the community realise how trivial it can be to get 6 months jail and cost the community $50,000 to keep someone in jail for 6 months, there will be an outcry about it. So they're waiting for the perfect case. And so they're being charged with assault. They're not being charged with assault occasioning bodily harm. And in fact, in the early stages, a couple of people were charged with assault occasioning bodily harm. And it turned out one of them was a person who'd escaped from a mental home. And they were the sort of things that people were going to end up with egg on their face. So they quickly dropped those charges to simple assault from assault occasioning bodily harm.
You are also very worried about new stop and search laws in WA that are currently being considered. Now, what under these laws which are being proposed, what new powers would be given to police?
Well, it means that they can stop and search anyone they like, any time they like, without any suspicion or without the person having done anything suspicious. So that if your next door neighbour's a policeman and he doesn't like you as you're going out your front gate, he can stop and search you. Now, they would say to me, "Oh, that's ridiculous. We wouldn't do that." Well, we shouldn't have the power to do it. And that's all there is to it. And again, the Commissioner of Police is saying, look, we'll only use it in certain circumstances. And again, it is. In that case, since he's such a decent human being, why don't we just say the Commissioner of Police can do whatever he likes because we know he's such a nice man, he won't do anything unreasonable.
You also have very strong views on WA's anti-hoon laws, which recently entangled an affluent Perth doctor, Mr. Patrick Nugawala. Tell me, what are those anti-hoon laws, and what happened to Mr. or Dr. Nugawala?
I have to say that I haven't taken, until Dr. Nugawala's case, I hadn't taken a lot of interest in the hoon laws because they're not dealt with by the district court. They're dealt with by the magistrates court. And I don't object to the police having the power to seize motor vehicles in certain circumstances. But again, it turned out that it was far too wide. Poor old Dr. Nugawala obviously is a very hard-working doctor, and he bought himself a Lamborghini. And he put it into the mechanic for the mechanic to fix it up. And according to the police, the mechanic was clocked doing some incredible speed that took
160
well
k's per hour, I think.
That's right, within the hoon laws, which entitled them to seize the car. Now, the doctor said, well, I've done nothing wrong. I didn't know he was going to do that, and I certainly didn't give him permission to do that. The relevant minister dealt with that very poorly, in my view, because what he tried to do was to play the politics of envy, to more or less say, well, look, who cares what happens to somebody who can afford a Lamborghini? Well, it turned out a lot of West Australians did, because even though we can't afford a Lamborghini, this was simply not fair. And again, it was a situation in which a politician, I think, learnt a lesson. And the lesson was that it is not in every case that people are more frightened of disorder than they are of tyranny. And that was a small example of tyranny against that doctor. And the police had no way of giving him his car back. And if the mechanic hadn't paid the $900 fee, the doctor would have had to pay the $900 fee to get his car back. And the car was impounded, I think, for 28 days.
So you're saying this is an example of laws which are simply draconian and they leave no room for looking for applying a common sense, justice, fair outcome.
That's right, and no room for looking at individual circumstances. And there always are, I should say, individual circumstances where you need to be able to look at those circumstances and say, is this fair in this case? It may be fair in 98% of cases, but what about the other 2%? And we are in the business of making sure that all our citizens have justice, and we don't operate on the basis of bad luck, you got caught, in even though you're innocent.
When it comes to law and order issues more generally and sentencing more generally, do you think that locking people up, does that deter crime? Is it a successful strategy?
It is a deterrent, but it's not everything. And that is the difficulty that judges have, that the community put all their eggs in one basket and they think that the crime problem can be solved by heavier and heavier sentences. And they are asking too much of the criminal justice system as an instrument controlling human behaviour. The criminal justice system has a role, but it's not every role. And the story is told of two men downriver, and a body comes down the river and they pull the body out, and then more bodies keep coming down the river and they keep pulling them out. And finally, one of them says to the other, "You stay here and do what you can, and I'll go upstream and see what's happening." happening. Now, as far as judges are concerned, we are downstream pulling the bodies out of the river. What in God's name are the rest of you doing upstream? And the fact is, you're doing nothing, and you're trying to put all the blame and all the responsibility onto us, and it's stupid, quite frankly, stupid.
So you're saying that there need to be alternative strategies upriver to stem crime. What strategies might they be?
The first thing I'd like to say is that I don't think it's a judge's job to start talking about what the other strategies are. What you are really doing is deflecting attention from yourself and what you should be doing. But I'll give you some suggestions. The first thing is, I frequently have young lawyers say to me, it was inevitable that my client would end up in the criminal justice system. And when you look at the life and the childhood of that person, you know that that's right. It was inevitable that they would end up in the criminal justice system. If we know it's inevitable, why aren't we doing more about it? In Australia, we simply do not spend enough money on early childhood intervention. You can see people coming, and yet we are doing nothing about that, or very little about it at all. Now, to think that you do nothing about that or very little about it, and then that somehow some judge can put that right and stop crime is, well, as I've already said, it's stupid.
So why do you think governments have tougher and tougher laws and don't address...
Because it's cheap, it used to be cheaper. Now, of course, the cost of keeping someone in prison is $100,000 a year, and people seem to think that that means that they are living in luxury conditions. The Inspector of Custodial Services in Western Australia has got some brilliant photographs of prisons that would show anyone that it is not a holiday camp, it is not luxury. That money, most of it goes in guarding people.
You're listening to The Law Report on ABC Radio, National Radio Australia and ABC News Radio, and I'm speaking to Antoinette Kennedy, the recently retired Chief Judge of the WA District Court. Antoinette Kennedy, so far we've been talking about law and order culture, and you've been offering your views, your analysis and your criticism of politicians, but presumably there must also be a place to scrutinise and analyse the decisions of judges. Do you believe that the media gives you and other judges a fair go?
Not overall. We had a very bad time in Western Australia for a period of time, which is now past, with our major daily newspaper. And they were only interested in criticising judges, and they weren't interested in making sure that the community understood what the situation was. And I understand the problems that the media have. The media, obviously, they've got to do things that people are interested in, and it's very immediate. But no one has ever asked what the community is doing about the crime problem, and there is this constant attempt to put all your eggs in one basket and to think that somehow judges have the answer to the crime problem and we're flatly refusing to use it. Now, I live in this community. I have family and property in this community. Of course I care what happens to the community. Of course I care about the victims of crime. It's positively insulting and hurtful to suggest that I am a person who doesn't care about crime and the victims of crime, and that if I'm not a paedophile myself, I'm a person who supports, encourages and promotes paedophilia. Nonsense.
Let's talk about, as much as you're comfortable, about some of the controversial decisions. I mean, like many judges, some of your sentences have attracted huge criticism from the media, and even sometimes from the politicians. And I think it was back in 2006, there was a lot of media coverage of your decision to release a child sex offender back into the community on a 2-year suspended sentence. This was the case of Kevin James Lilly. Can you tell me about that case and about your decision making in that case?
The first thing I'd say about any case is that what you have to realise is that each side has a right of appeal, and no one can stop them from that. Within 21 days, they can lodge an appeal, and the whole matter can be looked at again by the Court of Appeal. the prosecution and the defence can each lodge an appeal and it will be looked at again by three people. So they make that decision. And that, as an aside, is a reason why judges don't defend themselves. And that's the other thing that really irritates judges. And that's why it's so unusual for me to speak out now, because, of course, judges don't defend themselves. And the media know that. They know, and particularly in Western Australia, for a period of time, the West Australian used it, that we are soft targets. And by that, I mean, we don't answer criticism at all. And so the community may well think that we're agreeing with the criticism or that there is no answer. But that's not so. We simply don't answer because it interferes with people's rights of appeal. And the appeal has to be on the basis of what the judge has said in open court.
Well, Kevin James Lilly, who was he, and why did you reach a decision to give him a 2-year suspended sentence?
Because he was a person who hadn't been in any trouble before. He was a middle-aged man who'd had a number of life problems and had become an alcoholic. And he had a very nice wife and family. And he did not go out looking for anyone. He sat in his back shed every day and got drunk. And the little girls from down the street used to come to his back shed. And he was very, very drunk. And he used to entertain them, apparently. I mean, as horrible as it is, to entertain them, display himself. And mainly, there was very minor touching. If there had been proper touching, he would have gone to jail. But it was very minor touching. And he was displaying himself. And the little girls, one of them on one occasion said to him, "You're very naughty." And he said in his drunken state, "If you don't like it, this is my house, go home." So he'd regressed, according to the psychologist, so that he was like a 6-year-old himself. And so the little girls came to his home and they came back on a number of occasions. Now, no one's suggesting that this is not serious. That's a given. This is a very serious matter. By the time it came to sentence this man, who'd never been in any trouble before, as far as I can remember, you see, I don't keep these things in my head. And so he must have had either a very clean record or must not have been in trouble for many years. And my recollection is that he'd worked very hard and then given up work for some reason. By the time he came before me, he was stone cold sober and in counselling. Now, the idea that we would pay $100,000 to put that man in jail, where at that stage there were no programs. When he was out, he was sober, he had his wife and family's support, and he was in a program, simply seemed to me to be inappropriate use of community funds. And I stress that so far as him touching those children are concerned, it was very, very minor.
Mm. At the time, one of the newspapers, I think it was the Sunday Times in WA, said, quote, "Isn't it time we stopped using alcohol as an excuse? In the case of Kevin James Lilly, it's one of the worst excuses imaginable, but it was enough for District Court Judge Antoinette Kennedy." And the journalist described this as, quote, ridiculous justification, and a restraining order preventing Lilly from going within 100 metres of his victims as, quote, almost farcical. And I think the opposition leader at the time, or an opposition politician at the time, labelled the sentence, quote, "woefully inadequate," and, quote, "it highlights the enormous gulf between the soft sentences handed out by the court and the punishments demanded by the community for these types of offences." Well, what do you make
It's ridiculous. The community generally are not talking about offences where there is no touching, and they're not talking about offences where the offender is in his own back garden. He does not go out looking for anyone. He's just sitting there drunk. That's all he's doing. He's sitting there drunk and the little girls come around, so he displays himself to them. Now, I gave him a suspended term of imprisonment. I didn't say to him, "You're a wonderful human being, here's a gold medal." I gave him a 2-year suspended term. That meant that if he didn't do the program that I ordered him to do, he would serve the 2 years jail. It meant that if he got into any more trouble, he would not only be sentenced for what he did, but he would serve the 2 years. Now, the community's interest was in having him rehabilitated. And not set backward as a term of imprisonment would. And as I say, there were very few programs in the prison. That's improved a bit now, but there were very few programs in the prison at that time. Now, I think it's unrealistic in those circumstances for the community to pay over $100,000 to warehouse that man for at least 12 months without probably any program in those circumstances. Now, some people may disagree, and I know people say, we don't care what it costs. Well, that's okay. If you don't care what it costs, we'll shut down the primary school in your area. And we'll use that money for the jails, because it's silly to say you don't care what it costs. Of course you care what it costs. If it costs you schools and hospital beds, you do care.
Standing in the shoes of, say, the family of the victims or the survivors, I mean, they might say, well, the touching may well be classed as somehow minor, but that might not mean that the effect on the young people, the children, was minor. And we need, as a community, to respond to those sorts of crimes, and that's what they are, with a very, very firm hand.
Oh, in Western Australia, paedophiles go to jail for very, very long periods of time. No one should be under any illusion about that. But most of it is not reported, and it's not reported for the simple reason most of it is in the family, and therefore the media can't name and shame the offender.
Because that would identify the survivor or the victim.
That's right. And so the community is unaware of the real paedophilia problem in the community, which is one of the greatest failings of the media of all time. I'm not asking them to publish every one of those, because I know that would be very boring if they said today a stepfather, today a father, today whatever was sentenced to 6, 10, 12 years jail. But it would be nice if they pointed out that 95% of paedophiles are heterosexual adult males who are not priests or school teachers. But there is another point I want to make to you about something you said and about the demands of victims. The demands of victims are very important, but there is a view abroad that sentencing is simply between the victim and the offender. Now, if that were so, all we would need to do is to identify the offender and then say to the victim, you can do whatever you like to the offender. The offender, as a judge, the offender has done nothing to me, so I'm not particularly angry with him, but he's certainly the offender and you can do whatever you like to him. And that would be what we would do if sentencing was simply between the victim and the offender. But sentencing is not simply between the victim and the offender. Sentencing is between the victim, the offender, and the whole community. Now, in the end, we must do what is in the interest of the whole community. Now, it's understandable, and if I were a victim, I may want somebody smeared with jam and tied to an ant heap. I may want them killed. But that is not in the interests of the whole community. And I'm not decrying what victims want and how emotional they are and how it's affected their lives. But the reality is the world goes on and the community goes on. And sentencing has to take into account not just the rights of the victim, but the rights of the whole community and the fact that life goes on and you must do what is in the interests of the whole community, and it is rarely in the interests of the whole community that the offender be destroyed, and there are many victims who would want the offender destroyed, and as I say, I understand it, but it just cannot be.
The sometimes intense controversy that surrounded some of your sentences and those of your fellow judges prompted the Chief Justice of WA, Wayne Martin, I think it was in December 2006, to give a very direct, a very in-your-face speech where he attacked the media as giving, quote, a demonstrably false impression that judges are lenient when it comes to sentencing. But he also gave some statistics around the rate of imprisonment in WA. What are the rates of imprisonment in WA?
The rates of Western Australia has the highest rate of imprisonment of any state in the country. The highest rate of imprisonment. But nothing pleases some people who want to make law and order the issue. And so it cannot possibly be the case that we're not locking up enough people. Per 100,000 of population, we are locking up more people than any other state in the country.
Now, changing focus, there are now many women at the top of the profession, but that certainly wasn't the case when you started out. I think in your final year of law school, you were interviewed, and in an article you said, oh, no, there's no discrimination, women are as good as men. But that really wasn't the case when you started
out. It was
out.
Rubbish. I've been reminded of that on a number of occasions. It was absolute rubbish. But you see, I had completed my law degree and no one had been rude to me. So I thought in my naivety, well, that must mean there's no discrimination. I mean, there were no Supreme Court or District Court judges, no magistrates, no registrars, no masters, no prosecutors, no partners in big firms who were women. And there was a tendency to either pat women on the head or regard them as eccentrics. There have been huge improvements, obviously, but there were huge difficulties.
What was your experience like in your early years of practice?
No one's rude to you. You see, if they're rude to you, it would be a lot easier to deal with. They're not rude to you. They just don't take any notice of anything you say. And I can remember when I first realised this, I'd been out for about 3 or 4 years and I was appearing before a magistrate. And I said something which to me was perfectly sensible. And my opposition, who was a male, said something that I thought was really stupid. And the magistrate hung on every word he said. And I'm thinking to myself, listen, sport, he was a dork at law school. He's still a dork. Why are you listening to him and not me? Why am I being patted on the head? And it was slowly that I realised that the law has a very male way of thinking. And if you don't think in that way, then you must be wrong, not different, wrong. And that is a problem that women still have, although it's lessening as time goes on. And of course, I was the first woman judge in Western Australia, and that was not necessarily the most popular thing to be.
What was the reaction from other judges and from members of the profession?
On my own court, they weren't too bad, actually. When I say I don't like to go into the details, it's all such a long time ago. The only thing I like to say is really the judges on my own court were not my major problem. And it came as a bit of a surprise to discover that I was not a male clone, I think. And they really expected that I would just behave like a male in drag. Now, unfortunately, women don't behave like men in drag. Women are different. It's not that we're better, and as I said, I think recently Chairman Mao said, women hold up half the sky. We're not better, but we do have different approach, and you need the balance of both men and women. You don't want just men or just women. You need the balance of both.
You're stepping down with a sense of accomplishment and a sense of having contributed, but what about, I mean, are there things that you wish you could have achieved? What still remains to be done?
It's this attitude to sentencing. You know, I do live in this community. I have people that I love in this community. I do want this community to be more crime-free. And I do know that we're going in the wrong direction. And that, I thought, might improve over the 25 years, but it hasn't improved over the 25 years. And this is not just a matter of my ego. You know, judges don't like to be criticised. This is a matter of really caring about what happens in my community and really seeing that we're doing the wrong thing. And this is not the answer to the crime problem, just locking people up for longer and longer periods of time. It's got nothing to do with being sympathetic to offenders or not sympathetic to victims. My concern is for the whole community, and that's the thing where we appear to have gone backward.
Chief Judge Antoinette Kennedy, a great pleasure talking to you. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you very much.
That's the Law Report for this week. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next week with more law.